This is a Relay Project.
Real Talk starts right now. Here's Ryan Jesperson.
Back by popular demand, it is the group chat roundtable on this episode of Real Talk in just a second. If you're unfamiliar with the premise, this is a real politically driven group chat that exists. Members of that group chat, not all of them, but a select few are going to join us in just a second. All of the stuff that we throw back and forth, the rumor mill grinding it out in this group chat stays in the chat, but we take the people out of that chat and put them on the record talking about matters of municipal, provincial, and federal politics. That's coming up with City Councilor Sarah Hamilton, strategic communication strategist Jenny Adams, and real estate magnate and political strategist Jared Campbell. This episode of Real Talk wouldn't be happening without the support of Alberta's top real estate school, that's Rello. And if you're looking to kick off a new career, get started in a field that has unlimited earning potential, opportunity for you to be your own boss. You're not going to spend time in a cubicle, at least not any more than you want. You're going to want to check out Rello.ca. That's R-E-L-O. People love Rello because they've got a ton of different courses. Their instructors have the experience you need. It's all online, so it's guaranteed to work with your schedule. And the support continues long after you've studied for your exam, gotten certified, and started your business. Rello is invested in your success. And because you're hearing about this or seeing it on Real Talk, you're going to save a few bucks along the way. When you go to Rello.ca and use the special promo code Ryan100, they're going to knock $100 off both the Alberta Residential Real Estate Bundle and the Alberta Commercial Real Estate Bundle. That's $100 off when you use the promo code Ryan100 at Rello.ca. Jenny Adams is the founder and principal at the Adams Agency. Sarah Hamilton, a longtime city councilor here in Edmonton, and Jared Campbell works in commercial real estate. But Jared,
a graduate of Rello.
This is a real opportunity to
you know, you call me a real estate magnate, then you talk about your sponsor, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm a graduate of the Rello program.
Okay, so I didn't set this up, and Jared, you're not getting paid for this.
I didn't even get the discount code.
That's on brand.
I didn't know there was a discount code.
Yeah.
I took both the introductory and commercial real estate courses.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that, man.
And next thing you know, I'm a real estate magnate. I've never been called that before. So,
there you are.
You know, you do one after the other, and it's a nice little segue.
Yeah, you do politics on the side as kind of like a hobby in a way. I don't mean to denigrate your work in politics by calling it a hobby.
You don't get paid for it.
None of us do.
Wait a minute.
Counselor does.
No, I only get paid to govern. I don't get paid for the politics.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. But your day job in commercial real estate, your job is to fill office towers, right? And in some cases, help some people buy them or sell them or lease them out, or that's what you do during the day.
Broadly speaking, that and any other commercial real estate problems you have, just give me a call.
Yeah, there you go. Nice little plug there, JC. I appreciate that. How are things looking on that front, by the way? You have any reason for confidence in the big downtown urban cores? Do we have to go city by city when we talk about that? Or
You got to go like asset by asset, location by location. Downtown feels better than it has. Downtown's certainly better than it has been, but it's still a bit of a grind. It's still a little slow. Interest rates are still high, but I mean, we're, from a population standpoint, booming, right? There's so many people moving here. So if you're out in the suburbs and you're trying to build single family homes and you're trying to build out there, it's like go time. It's like boom times.
Yeah.
So it
I feel
really
like you can't
is
just let that slide, though. Like there hasn't been a development permit in downtown Edmonton since what, Sarah, 2021?
I've heard 2021.
2021. Yeah. We have a council. No, this is going to be really awkward. I'm sorry, Sarah. You're not here on behalf of council.
Today. I'm not here.
So
on
you're
behalf
on behalf of
council. Citizen Sarah okay. Hamilton. Yeah.
So we can speak like we do in our group chat. But I mean, I don't feel like we have a council that really loves downtown Edmonton and is making it a priority.
Is that a fair assessment of your colleagues?
I don't think it's a fair assessment. I think it's always a tense balance. I mean, I think so we know that most of the I'm going to say prosperity drives out of the core, right? People don't move to a big city so that they can, they may choose to live in the suburbs, but it's the downtown core that attracts people. That's the place where things happen. It's where usually your cool up and coming restaurants are. in Edmonton, it's where
the hottest podcast studios.
Yeah, the best podcast studios, the best photographers, all that. And I mean, we're in an entertainment district downtown right here, right? We're across the street from the arena. That is an attraction. But
so when you're choosing to invest here, JC, like over Calgary, for example, that has incentives and momentum?
No, I mean, there isn't a lot of investment going into downtown Edmonton. I think that's going to change. Like I said, it things feel better. I mean, you walk around downtown, there's a lot more people. You go to restaurants, they're full. Mm-hmm. But yeah, broadly speaking, and you know, and this is a bigger issue between Edmonton and Calgary. We're just not as urban. We haven't been for 15, 20 years, right? Like there are towers going in the Beltline and they feed white collar professionals who all work downtown. That's not Edmonton. Our employment centers are not as concentrated. We don't have that culture of urbanism. And people just don't want to spend the extra money, and, right? And things were more expensive to build downtown and they don't want to spend it and they don't want to pay more rent. So nothing happens.
And I understand there's about half the people living downtown that we actually need to make it sort of a continuous urban center. So that continues, like that's going
to be like a chicken and an egg. Yeah, you're not going to get people downtown until it's safe, until there's things to do, and you're not going to get those things. So there's people downtown, but the more people we can get downtown, the better. Obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. And our industrial, like a lot of the work, I think JC's right. It's happening outside of the core. It's happening in our industrial parks. It's happening in the surrounding communities. I think our challenge has always been trying to manage, leverage that work with the interests of Edmonton. I think that's what a lot of the regional work has been about.
I should mention that in our group chat, and I just totally took over your show, Ryan. Sorry.
No, that's the whole point.
We often just like drop really aggressive comments just to see how everybody responds, right? Yes. Like, council doesn't believe in Edmonton. Go. How do you feel, sir?
Although the one, I will be a little bit critical, and we don't want to sort of drag the content or the, you know, we want to protect the privacy of that chat. But Jenny, you're guilty quite often of leaving a comment and then deleting the comment. And okay. When we use WhatsApp, it shows there's a comment that's been deleted.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, I'm always underwater on everything. And so I'm always late to the group chat. And I'm like, what the hell is she getting
Sometimes
into?
Sometimes it's a spelling mistake, but I know you're referring to one particular thing that showed up in the middle of the night because I was on the other side of the world. And that was just me having cold feet. I'm like, oof, got to keep that.
You had a hot take, but it was a little too hot.
It's too hot. It's too hot.
Well, let's be honest. The UCP government here in Alberta, that's Daniel Smith's government, introducing bills 18 and 20. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about that today. Obviously, Bill 20, which came down after we talked about it on Thursday's episode of Real Talk. If you're just tuning in, that would have been the April 25th episode of Real Talk. Paves the way, opens the door for municipal political parties, like we predicted on the show during my Kathleen Ganley interview a short time ago, reintroduces or opens the door again for union and corporate donations. That was news to everybody except Real Talkers that heard that here on the show. It allows the province to remove city councilors when they believe that would be in the public interest. We'll obviously dig into that. And there are other broad implications. Now, everybody believes, Sarah, that this is because of the council that you sit on. That's Edmonton City Council. But the premier has gone on the record and said it's a left-leaning council. She believes it's being driven by partisan interests. Curious for your take on this. But first, why don't we hear from the Minister of Municipal Affairs? This is the Honorable Rick McIver on the record shortly after the bill comes out.
They will not have any formal affiliation with a provincial or federal political party. There will be no sharing of funds or voters lists between provincial and federal political parties and local parties. In other words, local government will remain local. Albertans will not see a municipal UCP party, for example, or a municipal NDP party, or a municipal Liberal party with any kind of direct connection to a provincial or federal party, or even the same name of a, or even be affiliated with a different name. It just won't be allowed.
So what metrics are going to use over that time period to determine if this was a successful project or not?
We'll see what happens. We'll measure what happens, and what happens will tell us what we measure. I mean, if there's, the fact is, if it seems to work well, and we get feedback from the public to say, okay, this is helpful. I knew who I was voting for and knew what policies they would likely support, and that helped guide my vote. And I feel good about that. And the other thing about it is too, it also works the other way. I voted for candidate L, just picking a letter out of the random letter out of the alphabet, and that candidate said they were NDP or said they were conservative and yet they voted the opposite way, then there's an accountability issue there that you promised me you would vote along this ideological line and you didn't, then that's another way to hold elected officials accountable.
Okay, that's shared by the breakdown. That's the Honorable Rick McIver. I'm sure that if he would have scripted that out, it may have landed a little more clearly, but your thoughts on what he said and your thoughts on the bigger picture.
So, I mean, it's not, there are municipal parties in other provinces. I wrote a blog about this the other day, and pretending like the sky is falling isn't helpful. But I don't think that you would hear, I guess we'll see what happens, and feel entirely confident in that. Something I think we are, like, that municipal politicians in general have missed completely is that people vote in provincial and federal elections with parties all the time, and they don't really see a problem with it. Municipal government is closer to them. I think there's lots of reasons to feel uneasy about it. I feel uneasy about it, and I could certainly go on about that, but I think we have, I don't think this will resonate really with ordinary Albertans. This is like, I have questions watching that as a municipal governor. I would have a hard time translating into why ordinary Albertans should care about this change.
Okay. So assuming that, have you decided whether or not you're going to run again next election?
I haven't, but it is like one of the reasons that I ran for municipal government in the first place. And JC was part of that very awkward conversation is because, he's laughing because it was awkward.
She cried in the middle of it. You were like, you're going to run for city council?
I'm really bad at talking in public. And I have a lot of anxiety.
We all
about
laughed
that.
About it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. But Sarah's anyway, but one of the, like I got into municipal government because I didn't like partisan politics. I like the idea of being able to stand on your own brand and to build coalitions across different ideas. That I felt was really powerful. If that bedrock of like why I ran changes, I like that would make me second guess if I'm going to be at the table.
Okay, you're widely considered to be, or you're recognized as, or characterized as one of the conservative councillors on Edmonton's council.
It's, yeah, which is kind of hilarious. But
okay, well, go on. Oh, I mean, everyone says it's you and Tim Cartmell.
Yeah, which is like, so last term, I would have been considered like really like centrist, maybe to the right of Dawn Iveson. I got called a liberal a lot. I think I've been really clear. I've worked for the federal Liberals. I worked for Team Trudeau in 2015. I also worked for the Progressive Conservatives in 2014 and 2015. But it was those experiences that made me, you know, look inward and say, I don't want to support parties. I want to support people.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is if we look at, you know, I'm not sure if you saw David Staples' column, but he's written in the Edmonton Journal, I see a tax freeze party sweeping Edmonton's next municipal election. We'll let everybody know that the founder of this new Tap Yeg political party in Edmonton, Jeffrey Hansen Carlson, is going to join me on the show next week. We'll pick his brain on that. But if this is indeed true, where there's going to be this rally and all of these lefties and these socialist Edmonton councillors are all going to get swept out of office and lose their jobs, assuming that you would want to keep your job, and maybe you don't, maybe you want to go explore something else. Mm-hmm. Hell, maybe you want to run for mayor. But assuming that you want to run again as counselor and you think it could offer job preservation to go on the record under a banner and say, I am the tax freeze or small C conservative option here, is that something you might consider?
So I think the reasons for joining a municipal party are actually like, as a veteran politician, they'd be below the water. It would be like one of the things that was outlined in the legislation is it's now $5,000 across all candidates in a municipality. How do you know? And so a party would allow you to share a $5,000 donation across multiple campaigns as a counselor. I think in that clip that was shown, the minister referred to not sharing voting lists, but if you are part of a municipal party, you might have access to legacy voter data that tell you sort of what people's voting track record is, what their interests are. Those would be the things I think that would motivate you to join a party rather than, I'm going to say, an ideological consideration.
Okay. David in our live chat on YouTube says the United Conservatives don't think Albertans can research candidates without big partisan labels. The UCP thinks Albertans are stupid. Travis says it'll reduce the diversity of candidates for local politics if they have to be vetted through a party first. It doesn't help us. That from Travis. What do you think, Jenny?
Well, let's be honest.
this is already happening. It's just not happening officially, right? Like there was an NDP slate in the last election for council, and there's, you know, conservative backing of candidates for sure. But JC, you and I talked about this years ago. This isn't rocket science. But whenever I talk to people, I'm like, sure, donate money. But what candidates, what really good people need is the ability to get elected. So give them talent and give them resources, because winning an election is a ground game. It's not a money game, right? It's a knocking on doors, identifying support. Like there is a system. So you and I talked about, like, what was it? Campaign in a box. Like here, we'll work with a bunch of candidates. We'll give our knowledge to some really great folks. Here's your branding, here's your messaging, help you through this, and then keep you accountable to your GOTV and to your strategy. So that Sarah, you get out the vote. For yours, we're literally driving to people's houses until you can't vote anymore, saying, you still haven't voted. Hi, did you need a ride? Like anything you can do like that, like last day GOTV strategy is hugely important. But most people, really good people who want to get elected, don't realize that that is so important. It's like, well, if I can get another $1,000, I can buy some more Twitter ads. That is not how you win. I can do another debate. That's not how you win these elections. So I think in a way, this party system, although good, bad, yada, yada, at least will help give knowledge. Because when we were, 2015? Did Catherine's campaign paid $18,000?
There's just such a huge...
You're talking about Catherine O'Neill, PC candidate.
So we paid $18,000 to the party for our signage and, you know, for some expertise. Like each candidate pays the party, they get that expertise. But it's a lot of work. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole, you know, and I'll go on the record. I'm broadly supportive of political parties at the municipal level.
Okay, tell us why.
I think with Sarah, you know, it's not like this end all be all that we're going to see this big big shift one way or the other. But, you know, and there's a few different reasons for it. I think that when I keep hearing the people against it, there's this very romantic notion of, oh, and, you know, people will just go research on their own. They don't research on their own. And people, you know, each individual councillor will just vote and build a coalition. Man, we get teams built formally and informally on council. We have partisan backing. All of this does is makes it a little bit more formal. And I think that's a good thing. I think that, to Jenny's point, you know, that what we're trying to do is work backwards. The first principle that we try to work backwards, are we going to get better governance? Are we going to get better decision making? Okay, well, what system is going to bring out the best people? And so right now there's a huge barrier. So you go to somebody and say, well, you want to run for council. You don't have a list. You don't have any donation. You don't, no money's coming in there. You don't have a brand. You don't have policy. You don't really know. You don't have a team. You don't have anything. But if you go into a party system, there's a developed party system, you can sit down with a good person and say, hey, we can do that for you. So you're the type of person we think could really add value to city council, which means you are likely successful in another area of your life, which means you're busy, which means you've got your area of expertise. You're not sitting there, which are typical municipal council, where you kind of have time on your hands and you are like involved with your community league and you're kind of hanging out.
Oh,
on
wow.
I know. I'm like, Weezy. Like, Weezer his friends. You know, he's talking about.
Like there's well, one, and, 2 feet away from you, dude. And,
well, hey, that's fine, right? But maybe somebody who is a successful business owner or a successful nonprofit executive
who's very,
or podcast host who maybe should run for mayor, and we can talk about that later. You know, this would help people come into the system, and we can get some better people because of that.
So I'll say two things. First,
Sarah was really busy when she cried in that living room meeting with you.
I realized I'm not great at speaking in public, that, and it was something I had to work on. And I still get a little of a clump. So municipal elections have, on average, 20% less voter turnout than in provincial or federal elections, on average. So people aren't doing the research because they just tend not to vote as much, which I think is really unfortunate, because when you walk out your front door, you're dealing with your municipal government.
100%. To think that people aren't voting for their city councilors and for school board trustees is wild.
Yeah. And
I mean, but at the same time, right? Like what, snow clearing? Like, oh man, I'm so passionate about snow clearing and I'm so passionate about my sidewalk. It's like
property taxes. People probably,
we had an election today. I think we'd have a huge turnout.
But
yeah, we stepped on your toes.
The dollars that go into your out of your pocket, it's way more at the provincial and federal level. We're talking about healthcare. We're talking about education. We're talking about like the deepest, most important things to you. Municipal government, man, it's not the same.
But I care about mosquitoes.
But like,
yeah, mosquitoes.
Provincially, they also, they've been like able to focus on those issues. They deal with a ton, like if you look at provincial and federal government, they deal with a ton of issues that we never hear about, but it's sort of fomented into healthcare, education, like these are the big things. We could talk about that at a municipal level. It's land use, it's city building, it's like local economic development,
investment in downtown.
It's investing in your city center. It's like quality of life stuff, right? But I think something that happens because people go in all different directions is you don't get that focus. So if you take it out of the current political context, whenever we're talking public policy, I like to switch things around. But you think two mayoral elections ago in 2017, Don Iveson won as mayor. But there was how many mayoral candidates? And some of the clips out of those debates were embarrassing. And I remember even now Senator Paula Simons, then Edmonton Journal columnist Paula Simons, saying, you know, maybe the bar should be a little bit higher, because I think that most people would say that having a competitive election holds incumbents accountable for the decisions that they make. But when you see something like that, or let's look at the 2016 by-election in Edmonton, where you had 32 candidates running, you're not getting a good public policy conversation. You're not getting
sounds like Sarah's coming around to the idea of political parties. I support this.
I'm like, hey, she's talking herself into it through this episode.
Yeah, political parties maybe could solve this issue, solve this issue that you've bringing
up. I think political parties is a mechanism. I think what we have writ large is an issue with you can't treat Edmonton the same way you treat Camrose and the same way you treat a Summer Village. Edmonton and Calgary are different. You need to modernize your municipalities. Political parties is one way. Again, it's something that exists in Vancouver. It exists in Montreal. Those cities seem to be doing just fine. But and you could point out whether or not parties are part of the problem on that, and we could probably have a whole conversation. Where I think I think that's these changes, it's a bit of one step forward, two steps back. I don't know if corporate and union donations is the right move.
Okay, instance. Yeah, and I'm curious to know about that, how you feel about that. I wanted have their flamethrowers out early. The flamethrower will come out. Brace yourself, Jenny. Brace yourself, JC. The flamethrower presented by the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park coming up. But we'll get to some early ones here. Justin says, sorry, Jenny, the gaslighting won't work. Keep your team politics bullshit out of local municipal elections. The benefits don't outweigh the negatives. This won't attract the right candidates. And Travis says, ooh, surprising that the commercial real estate guy likes this, is in support of this garbage. I do like this quote from Alyssa, who says, so then a person with no party system could basically never run for council. They wouldn't have the resource backing. Sure. Sounds super, is a good point from Alyssa.
I just don't think they have it now. I think that it's a romantic. I agree with JC on this. It's a romantic idea that you can just get 25 signatures, put down a deposit, and you can win. Like, once in a while it happens, but I think as our city grows, the political system has become much more sophisticated, and the governing system has become much more sophisticated.
Okay, let's get back to some gaslighting.
But listen, back to the gaslighting in a second. But first, Sarah does have to attend to the business of the city, so we only have 8 more minutes with you, which means I want to go to a couple other things before you have to bolt, and then we'll go back to these two and spend the rest of the hour with them. But first, I'll let you know that these conversations don't happen without the support of incredible Real Talk partners like our friends at Friesen Brothers, and you know we're thrilled for them opening their 17th location across the province of Alberta, that one in West Edmonton. And of course, the Glenora location, but all of the Friesen Brothers locations have you covered for Mother's Day coming up. Do you have a plan yet? They've got their all-you-can-eat Mother's Day brunch May 11th and 12th, plus the Mother's Day charcuterie box from Catering by Friesen Brothers, a great way to treat moms for all they do. Spend time with mom, plus make sure she's got really great food. Catering by Friesen Brothers prepares that charcuterie box with the very best of Alberta deli meats, cheeses, and accoutrement. Easy to order online, pick up at any Friesen Brothers location for just $90, check out cateringbyfriesen.com for more details. If you are absolutely set on getting organized, getting decluttered in 2024, you've got nothing to lose requesting a free consultation with the design team at California Closets. Nobody does custom storage solutions, custom closets better than they do. I'm talking to you firsthand. knowledge. That's my place. Carrie and I, about 10 years ago, first reached out to California Closets. We told them our budget. We told them what we were hoping to accomplish. And boy, did they ever deliver. And it's not just the designers, the installers as well. The work they do is impeccable. Don't only increase the value of your home, but the quality of your time you spend there with California Closets. And we wanted to give a shout out to Real Talker Neil, and we're doing that all week long. Neil wrote in to talk at RyanJesperson.com about Complete Care Restoration. I don't know if you've been there, if you own maybe a restaurant or whatever your business is, but they had their freezer ice maker malfunction, and Neil was particularly concerned about moisture under their floorboards. You know, then you've got the rippling, then you've got black mold potentially. So what did Neil do? Well, he took our advice and reached out to Complete Care Restoration. He says the owner of the company, Kelly, responded with a thorough email within 24 hours, offered to come out free of charge to do some testing to advise Neil on the best course of action. Neil says, I was very impressed with their prompt response, the professionalism, the thoroughness of their response. Seems like a first-class company. Take it from Neil. If disaster ever strikes in your neck of the woods, make sure you reach out to Complete Care Restoration. The United Conservatives Bill 20 opens the door for union and corporate donations. It allows the province to remove elected city councilors if they believe it's in the public interest. These are just a couple of elements of the bill. Union and corporate donations. I understand some people may feel like, well, the union donations are the problem. Other people may feel like, well, the big corporate donations are the problem. The NDP got rid of both. The UCP bringing them back. Does anybody feel strongly about this?
I like them both.
Yeah, of course you do. As a fundraiser, you think it's great.
I think it's great.
I mean, I think it's interesting. So, you know, because this can go, you know, where does it fall on left-right lines? So at the federal level, corporate and union donations got banned by the conservatives, right? Because that was where the federal liberals were getting all of their money. So, you know, 20 years later, do we say, oh, was it a good thing? So what ends up happening? Now you're trying to raise money. So you used to be able to go to the corporates and the unions and the, you know, those kind of folks. And now you've got to go to the lowest common denominator. Have you seen what fundraising emails look like on the federal level? They are designed to get your blood pressure to go up so that you donate $50 and $100 because those are the people that donate to campaigns. And so the political parties at the federal level end up building these whole massive infrastructure to fundraise low dollar donations from the angriest people in Canada. That's what it looks like if you ban corporate and union. So maybe that's, you know, why is that?
But
they
also brought the limit down from 30,000 to 5,000 spread amongst everybody. So that's also, is that not going to counterbalance? Like if I'm a corp and I can write a $30,000 check, like that's significant. But now I can only do five across five or 10 candidates I really like. And I usually give a little bit to everybody, like a couple $100 here or there. So that really limits those big spenders. So even though you're getting the corporate donations, you still can't spend very much money in comparison to last time.
So when the ban originally came in, one of the things that I think municipalities were arguing for was give us tax credits. In the past election, you didn't have tax credits and you didn't have corporate and union donations. So now I'm going to an individual and saying essentially give me money without, or give me a donation without any donation benefit. And you do have a donation benefit you do have tax credits at a provincial and federal level. So something there had to give. I would have rather seen tax credits because I think that it incentivizes individual donors to donate even at the $25 level. As you know, if we're wondering kind of how we got here, having corporate and union donation I'll say though, like if you were catering to an angry base, and that base can be angry, like liberal, conservative, NDP.
You can make anybody angry.
You can make
anyone
angry.
That's what you
got
to do to get them to give you money, right?
Then,
yeah. Get them angry, then they'll give you money.
Yeah, and that's the motivation then. And so if you're wondering how we're getting in this position now, 20 years later, federally, where the rhetoric is much more heightened, I think that plays a part in it.
I got to get two more questions in before you have to take off, Counselor. Number one, the province could have removed sitting counselors before. I mean, the province in past has fired counselors or suspended them. The province has dissolved or threatened to dissolve school boards. I mean, they've had that power. I guess Bill 20 makes it easier. I don't quite understand or have a fulsome understanding yet of how it works, but I see Calgary Councillor Sean Chu's name swirling around in everybody's commentary right now, a disgraced former Calgary police officer who didn't have the truth about his history with the Calgary police involving an underage girl surface fully until after he was elected. Everyone's going, well, this would be like how they could get rid of someone like Sean Chu. But really, I mean, the province, I guess, if they believe or deem it to be in the public interest, could get rid of anybody. I mean, that's your job. That's your profession. How do you feel about it? Is it a protection of ethics in democracy, or is it a threat?
I mean, municipalities are creatures of the provincial government. They can do what they want. That being said, when you go to an election, elections are the accountability mechanism for your elected officials. So we have a municipal election next year. Edmontonians and Albertans writ large will have an opportunity to weigh in on how they think their local councils are doing and their councillors are
doing. What happens in the meantime when you elect somebody and then councillor so-and-so from Devon, are they not in jail? Or, mm-hmm. you know, I work with a lot of smaller municipalities, especially in crisis and reputation work, and so-and-so councillor's stealing, or, you know, they are giving their money to the fire department over here and they're doing shady things, and there's no mechanism. You can go to the ethics commissioner, they can do an investigation, they come back to council, and then you decide that we're going to remove you from your committees. And that mm-hmm. is the worst that can happen. So, I mean, it is a slippery slope for sure, but right now what exists is, like, you can get elected, do whatever you want, and then, you know, 6 months leading up to the next election, hope everybody forgets everything and get reelected, because name recognition is king in municipal politics.
Yeah, probably defined, because right now it's just like public interest. There's probably should be some, you know, like cabinet can decide what's public interest, right? Yeah. And that's just a little bit too loosey-goosey. Like, you know, Michael Janz is out there on Twitter again. Oof,
making life difficult for the golfers at the Royal Mayfair. That's not in the public
interest. He needs a new hobby.
Councillor Bill 18, before we thank you for your time, obviously the Provincial Priorities Act, or the Stay Out of My Backyard Act, as the Premier's called it, essentially funds coming from Ottawa for researchers, for hospitals, for housing, et cetera. Danielle Smith wants those proposals, those agreements, to go across her desk before she approves them, says that she's prepared to go to court on this, says that Ottawa is veering outside its lane. Most people that we talk to that work in your field say that this is going to make it much more difficult, create much more red tape for municipalities, for example, to address the housing crunch. This is something obviously very relevant to you. Your thoughts on Bill 18?
I mean, the red tape issue is an issue, especially when it comes to research. I happened to talk to some post-secondaries last week when it first came out. I would have a concern about the fact that everyone's been kind of lumped in together when it comes to addressing those big issues: climate, housing, transportation. I think we all need to get on the same page. What the bill is saying is that we're not all on the same page.
Yeah. How important is it for the city of Edmonton to be able to deal directly with the feds?
Specifically for Mayor Sohi.
I think this term it's been incredibly important. Let's go back two terms. I think Dawn Iveson as mayor negotiated funding for the LRT directly with the federal government, and was able to bring the provincial government along on that. I think it in and I hesitate to comment on some of the things that have happened more recently, but I think that there's been a gap in priorities between the federal and provincial government, and I think in Edmonton it hasn't, you know, we've been stuck in the middle, and I don't know that that served us well.
Thank you so much for making time for us. You've got to bolt early to go, you know, take care of the work of the city. So we appreciate that. That's City Councillor Sarah Hamilton. You can check out her blog, which she mentioned, at sarahhamilton.ca, and we'll link to that in the show notes. The headline: municipal parties aren't the end of the world, but it won't make cities better. Thanks, Counselor. We'll talk to you again in just a little bit. Interesting comment here in the live chat from Aurora Astra, who says, well, don't we have recall legislation for removing counselors? The electorate should decide who is removed, not the provincial government.
Yes.
Yeah, so we also saw that it's virtually impossible. It's
virtually impossible.
It's actually not a bad idea, but you got to change. You can't let, you know, like what was the one trying to do Gondek, and whether or not that was like a PR stunt as much as anything, but it was like, it was more people than had voted in the election.
But you should understand that in these smaller communities too, you have Take Back Alberta, super organized, who are like, we're just going to get these people unelected. And they're very effective again at that get out the signature strategy, right?
You know, well, why are people signing it if they don't, you know, get involved, right?
It's true, because they're angry because there's no more corporate unit donations.
The angriest people run the show when they're the only ones donating.
Right? I've been curious to ask you guys about this. Have you seen, I'll show it on my screen right now. Have you seen this video of Pierre Poilievre, official opposition leader? I don't know sort of the full details of how this came about, but in Eastern Canada, another roadside attraction, you may call it, with apologies to Gord Downie for invoking this, but among the Diagonal and Fuck Trudeau flags, mingles Pierre Poilievre with this group of demonstrators. He stops by, presumably he and his team driving by saw the, I don't believe that they targeted or headed out on purpose to this demonstration, but they saw it on the side of the road. You can see the Canadian flags flying upside down, et cetera, et cetera. And spends a bit of time with this group. You know,
he's just meeting with donors.
Promises them he'll axe the tax, you know, snaps photographs with them and the like. I think for most people, the name Diagonal or this group Diagonal may not be so familiar, but it's a group that's, if you Google it, you may be somewhat shocked at some of the things they've said on the record. On the record, on a live YouTube broadcast, the leader of Diagonal has talked about sexually assaulting Pierre Poilievre's wife. They've said some other obviously horrific and disgusting things. The RCMP has gone on record talking about Diagonal. And it's obviously got some eyebrows raised, the fact that Mr. Poilievre would spend any time talking to these people. Johnny, can we tee up that clip from the Prime Minister? This is interesting. So Justin Trudeau goes on the record. Now, obviously, there's political opportunity here for the Prime Minister when he sees this. So take that for what it's worth. But here's what the PM had to say after this video surfaced earlier this week.
Every politician has to make choices about what kind of leader they want to be. Are they a kind of leader that is going to exacerbate divisions, fears, and polarization in our country, make personal attacks, and welcome the support of conspiracy theorists and extremists? Because that's exactly what Pierre Poilievre continues to do, not just when you see him engaging with members of Diagonal, but also when he refuses to condemn and reject the endorsement of Alex Jones. Alex Jones is a proven liar and conspiracy theorist who, you know, has to pay millions, hundreds of millions of dollars because he lied about the Sandy Hook killing that killed 20 little kids. This is the kind of man who's saying Pierre Poilievre has the right ideas to bring the country towards the right, towards conspiracy theories, towards extremism, towards polarization, towards the kind of lies that Alex Jones is peddling still. So the fact that Pierre Poilievre hasn't stood up to condemn that endorsement, the fact that he continues to encourage the kind of divisive approaches to Canada that I don't think Canadians want to see, really shows that he will do anything to win, anything to torque up negativity and fear. And it only emphasizes that he has nothing to say to actually solve the problems that he's busy amplifying.
So that's Justin Trudeau on the heels of that roadside visit of Alex Jones. Adam C. in our live chat meantime says, oh yeah, so says the most divisive prime minister in my lifetime, referring to Justin Trudeau. Is Trudeau onto something? Is this something he can hook into, latch onto, and turn this polling around? What do you think?
I don't know. No. I mean, I don't think that this is the thing. Are we surprised Pierre's hanging out with these folks? I mean,
they're donors. I guarantee you, I was only like half being facetious. I guarantee you the percentage of donors in that video were higher than the Canadian population.
He doesn't look overly comfortable think the money comes with what from? He's doing, but he understands that, yeah, that's a part of his base. So I don't think we're surprised that he's spending time with, I mean, it's disappointing. It's a turnoff to me, obviously, but like, just is what it is. And then we start talking about the housing crisis again and, you know, mortgage rates that are sky high and on and on and on. And people forget about that. They want to know what's in it for them. And right now what's in it for them with the way they're voting is, what can I afford? Can I keep the roof over my house? Can I keep more money in my families? And that's going to be more important than if this guy's again hanging out with some conspiracy theorists or, you know, I'm not going to say any other people, but yeah.
Yeah. Like the politics, I think you're right on the politics of it. Who does this appeal to? Who's going to switch their votes here? You know, absolutely. What's he doing stopping there? Who are these? You know, these are some terrible people and he shouldn't have been doing it. Does that matter? Is that going to matter? I mean, you see it on both sides. You know, it gets very partisan about who's being, you know, seen in a picture with who and who's talking to who and whose combatants are being rude or mean to somebody on Twitter and the whole thing. And certainly, I think this goes a little bit further than what you would normally
see. Can you think of an example off the top of your head where the leader of another federal party has participated in something similar or put themselves in a similar situation.
No, I think this goes across that normal line, and he really should have, you know, whether or not he thought, hey, there's some supporters and I'm going to stop in, and then he sees the fuck Trudeau this and the Diagonal flags, he should have probably not gone there, certainly. And I think I'm just speaking to the politics of it. Like Jetty said, is this going to really move the needle? Is people going to change their views on him? I think this is somewhat baked in that these are his supporters. And I think that a lot of this non-issue based, who's saying what, you know, Alex Jones, you know, endorsement, I don't think it ever moves the needle, because I think it mostly speaks to the people that are already in or against him. And it's really the bread and butter issues around housing, around affordability, around inflation, that are going to, you know, be the things that could move the needle. But I don't know, maybe the needle can't even be moved. It doesn't matter what issue they're
interesting comment here from Kenzie, who says more people will vote for Pierre after the Alex Jones endorsement. Kenzie throws in an LOL. So I don't know if they're joking or not. I mean,
if you think about the handful of votes that went over to the People Party of Canada, right, you know, and you're in competitive ridings. Again, the election right now, based on polling, is not particularly competitive, but in a competitive riding, and they polled 5 or 7%. I mean, that's enough to maybe start to swing things, right? And you don't want to lose those voters. And so maybe there's some strategy behind it.
Saucy Sea Witch, one of my favorite handles. I read the comments just so I can say Saucy Sea Witch, says most of these people in the video are the same ones who've been gallivanting across the country complaining about the price of gas while hauling campers and driving RVs. Many have no real idea how the world works. Bunny Slipper says, I see Trudeau talking with voters all the time, and he actually does get in front of cameras. Poilievre waits for these roadside attractions and then posts it on Facebook. Yeah, some leader. Lou says, you are the company you keep. Like, it's interesting, right? You don't necessarily win a federal election by convincing everybody that you're the best choice. You just identify what you need to do to win, who can get you there, and then reach them effectively, right? Like, wasn't it remarkable before the last provincial election when Daniel Smith went on the record and basically revealed the playbook and basically said, I don't need Calgary to win? Do you remember that? Yeah. I mean, obviously there had been some strategy.
Turned out she did, so I don't know about that strategy, but yeah, she did say
well,
that.
Well, I mean, she lost Calgary and she still won. So in that context, she was right. The NDP won Calgary by the numbers, and Danielle Smith is the premier. So I guess she was right.
It was a pretty close call, though.
It was close.
Well, she needed seats from
Calgary.
The
thing is Pierre's going to have these voters no matter what, right? Like, they're not ever going to vote for Trudeau. They're not ever going to donate to Trudeau. Whether he stops and spends time with them on the side of the road or not, he's still going to have their votes.
Well, when Aaron O'Toole was the leader, they went and voted for Maxime Bernier potentially, right? I don't know. Yeah, okay. Like, maybe that's the concern. Maybe when they're sitting in their strategy room, they're saying, hey, we can't bleed numbers off to the PPC, and the people that, you know, the blue liberals, people in the center, you know, they're going to ignore this because they're concerned about housing prices and they're concerned about inflation and they're concerned about these other things. And so we build a bigger tent by appealing to some of these extremists because they might go somewhere else, whereas other people will maybe won't leave our tent.
He was certainly jumping out of reach of being in anyone's pictures with them, though. Did you see that? He was always like three feet away. Like, yeah. He didn't want to be standing neck and neck and have his face all over the place.
Yeah, well, you sort of get the sense that, like, maybe pretty soon after he arrived there, he maybe realized that he didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Right? There's one moment in one of the videos, and folks can take the time to watch it for themselves if they like. A guy says to him, kind of ostensibly, I'm assuming the leader of this or one of the leaders of it, he says, we've been here for 23 days. And he says, you know, we're the ones that have been here for 23 days. Do you have any questions for us? And Pierre's like, no. He goes, no. And then he goes, but I will axe the tax. I will axe the tax. It's kind of like,
maybe
okay.
He's just driving along. He just smoked a joint. He saw some guys over there with some flags. He jumped out, a little baked, didn't realize what was going on. Got himself in a situation he didn't want to be in.
AGK in the live chat says, or maybe Pierre just stopped by a random protest and one guy happened to have a small flag crudely represented in the inside of a trailer door and the paid for media ran with a story. I don't know what paid for media means. I'm kind of sick of that. I mean, I do know what he's implying, but I mean, obviously the video was released by someone other than a media outlet. And I think to not comment on it, it's significant when there's groups there wearing Diagonal hoodies and flying Diagonal flags. I just think it's interesting. I also just don't know, like, and here, I'm not trying to sort of be this like delicate flower, but I don't know if you see like Jagmeet Singh rolling around in front of flags that say, like fuck Poilievre, or I don't know if you see Trudeau.
Wouldn't the extreme on the other end be like climate extremists and, you know, like left leaning issues, right? They'd have 100%.
I think the equivalent, exactly, yeah. Jenny, the equivalent would be like, you know, if there was like another national rail blockade or something, or something like people were chaining themselves to trees in Ferry Creek and you know, or whatever, like the Weibo Ludwig type stuff, like looking to blow up, you know, whatever, the pump jacks or stuff like that. If federal party leaders were to swing by those demonstrations, you know, snap photos, say, keep it up, say, we need you to keep doing stuff like this. I don't think Jagmeet Singh would do it. I also don't think Jagmeet Singh is a particularly great leader, but I definitely don't think Trudeau would put himself in that position. But then again, if you're Pierre Poilievre, you're laughing right now, listening to me say this and saying, yeah, why would I take pages out of the Trudeau playbook? He's totally 20 points behind us.
Catherine and I were at an ARC. O'Neill and I were at an ARC foundation fundraiser earlier this week. And there was an NDP candidate that we were chatting with, a leadership candidate. And someone came over and said, "Ooh, let me get a picture of you guys." And they immediately jumped so fast out of that picture. They did not want to be in a photo op with Catherine and myself, which I just thought was awesome and very perceptive on their part. So happy to, you know, chit chat and all those sorts of things, but definitely don't want that image showing up. Of people who aren't traditional NDP supporters, I suppose, online. So, I mean, they know what they're doing.
We haven't really talked much about the NDP leadership race. You guys want to go there for a second or two? We're hanging out with Jenny Adams, Jared Campbell. Both of you are looking like you don't have a hot take, which I don't know if that could be
quite
possible.
I've heard it's a bit of a liberal takeover, right?
Okay, like, well, you've got 60 seconds to come up with something. How's that?
Okay,
and in the meantime, I want to talk to people about what Pathways Alliance is doing to address emissions coming out of Alberta, emissions across Canada, of course, as global energy demands are changing. We've talked to you about pathwaysalliance.ca. My conversation with Federal Jobs Minister Randy Boisseau just a few days ago, he brought up this initiative as well, working with governments. Pathways Alliance is on proposed carbon capture and storage, a network for Canada's oil sands. Canada's six largest oil sands companies working together to offer the world responsibly produced oil as global energy demands evolve. Pathways Alliance is working with provincial and federal governments to build a large-scale carbon capture and storage network to reduce emissions from operations, to protect jobs that exist, to create new jobs. Responsibly produced energy is what the world wants, and it's what Alberta can provide. You can learn more about what's happening by checking out pathwaysalliance.ca. Hey, this is a shout out to those of you that are right now looking for work. You're either unemployed or underemployed, but you're a skilled tradesperson. Maybe you're an electrician. Maybe you understand designing solar-powered systems for residential, commercial, agricultural, or industrial applications. Maybe you're great at sales. Maybe you're an HR expert. Kubi Renewable Energy is growing its team in BC and Alberta. In particular, their beautiful new locations in Calgary and Lethbridge, on top of their Kamloops and Edmonton offices. They're young, they're growing, and they're reshaping Canada's energy portfolio. You can get in touch with their team today by visiting the careers link at kubienergy.ca. Such a cool place to work. And maybe you're going, okay, Jespo, yeah, that sounds good, but first, I got to level up my schooling. I got to level up my understanding of the industry I want to work in. Well, enter Athabasca University. It's Canada's open university, with world-class accredited online degrees and courses designed so you can complete your education whenever and wherever it works for you. Your only commute is to your device, which means it's perfect. That's why tens of thousands of Canadians choose Athabasca University. More than 94% of their alumni polled satisfied with the quality of their AU education. Can you imagine that? More than 9 out of 10 people say it was worth it. It helped them pursue their career goals. You can select your path today by visiting the AU Advantage. Learn more at athabascau.ca. A liberal takeover of Alberta's official opposition.
An Alberta Party takeover.
Look at the Nenshi brain trust, right?
Come on, you guys.
The initial, before the Alberta Party was founded and people were starting to get together in 2009, talking about how there needed to be another option away from the PC Party. This is going back a little bit. Yeah. Nenshi was in those rooms. His right-hand guy, Chima Nkendrum, was very involved in the sort of, I don't want to say, you know, kind of founding. The Alberta Party had existed for a long time before that, and there was a sort of quote-unquote takeover, which is where the iteration came in 2010. Nenshi's longtime right-hand guy, Chima Nkendrum, was involved for a long time. If you look at some of the brain trust that was involved in the Nenshi mayoral election, They were also some of the folks that helped Greg Clark get elected when he first got elected to the legislature.
For the Alberta Party's sake, I hope it's true, because I feel like they really always have deserved some traction, but have never been able to get there. But I've heard that it's federal Liberals, lots of Liberal Party participation, a lot of nerves on the NDP side of kind of what's happening. It'll be really interesting to see. Like, we're only talking about Nenshi, but, you know, was chatting with Sarah Hoffman the other day, and she said that she wouldn't say how many memberships that she'd sold, but she was very confident. And of course you are. You're not going to say anything else.
What are you going to say?
But she had said like thousands and thousands and thousands and implied, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 memberships, which will be interesting to see. Like, I don't think it's just a Nenshi race. And if Nenshi does win, is he the guy to go up against Daniel Smith?
Is he?
I don't know.
I think he more so than Hoffman. I would rather, if I was the NDP, I'd rather have him. And I think
but does Calgary like Nenshi? Tell me. I'm not sure.
Calgary likes people from Calgary more than they like people from Edmonton.
I've got a viewer, Alyssa from Calgary right now, that says these two are so scared, it's palpable.
What am I scared of?
What are we scared of? Saying the wrong thing?
What are we scared of?
I don't know.
Or talking about something we don't really care about?
Oh, because I think we're maybe UCP supporters.
Probably your UCP supporters, and you're afraid that the NDP will
emerge. I'm in commercial real estate. I know I got a comment that I'm in commercial real estate.
I just represented a union in a massive campaign. Like, I'm all over the place.
You did. Can we go on the record for that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
mind. Yeah, you represented CSU 52, which negotiated a deal from the city of Edmonton that a lot of people believe is widely responsible for the property tax increase.
I know JC believes that.
Yeah.
Well, there's what you believe in and where the numbers come from. I mean, the biggest expense the city of Edmonton is salaries, and whether it's right or wrong, certainly council should have anticipated that there were going to be increases in salaries and probably raise property taxes a little more 2 and 3 years ago. They definitely kicked the problem down to themselves and now had to raise property taxes almost 9%. So
yeah, like,
the deal
that
wasn't crazy.
The deal, it was
what
like,
was it, like 1%, 1%, something like that?
They got like 0.2 of an increase on 1 year and nothing the third year, yeah, and then 1%. Like, it was, one should be overly enthused with
it's
this.
Not crazy in isolation, right? When you say, well, it's only 1% here, 1% there, the position the city took and why it almost went to a strike was when you look at the salaries and you compare them to the comparable private sector jobs and you compare them to municipalities across Canada. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening was in 2013, the contract started in 2014. You know, we, at this point, Edmonton had gone through a couple of booms in 2007, 2008, and again in 2013. Union prices go up. Union wages go up. And so a five-year contract gets signed in 2013. So starting 2014, union salaries across the big five unions in Edmonton go up 13%. Of course, what happens in 2014, the economy crashes and we spend the next 5 years in the doldrums, right? And so the average citizen of Edmonton doesn't see a raise and the average person of the big five union sees a 13% raise. And so it set things it really kind of put things off kilter. So Iveson, a couple of years of zeros. And so now you say, well, that's only 1 or 2%. I think the position the city was taking was that 1 or 2% is still on top of a pretty good base. Totally. That's a little bit higher than the comparables.
I think, and these folks in particular hadn't had a raise since 2018. So it's not like they've been, you know, getting sweetheart deals, JC, for years and years. But I think what Edmontonians are actually really sick of is projects and, you know, directions that feel like their money's being wasted. So then when it comes down to, well, we have to give a tax increase because we need to pay people more. Well, actually, we also have Blatchford that's like literally going nowhere. We have LRT projects that, you know, we're spending a lot of money. We have the electric buses. We have the hydrogen thing. We have all of these projects that have seemingly spent a lot of money. And so now we're talking about, you know, giving somebody literally a 0.25% raise, which is what they got in year two, like more than what they were asking for, 1.25. And that's what we're going to make these difficult decisions on, rather than looking at the projects that we've agreed upon or being more critical with Blatchford, for example, and saying, you know, where can we be spending our money more properly or, you know, more effectively, rather than just saying, well, the people and the salaries, because that's the easiest way. I mean, we all have different...
Well, they're the biggest chunk by far.
Yeah,
like,
but
we could
when
sort
you have
Blatchford
decisions,
out tomorrow and we're
yes,
talking about like fractions of a percent on a property tax increase.
If you're a counselor and you decide that this is what we're going to do with our dollars and this is the vision we're taking the city, you still need people to execute on those. So it's not realistic to think that you can have a corporation and not budget for employee increases for 7 years, like that you're just going to give them nothing
absolutely.
Nothing,
they should have
right?
budgeted. budgeted, right?
They should have budgeted for it.
Like, they should have budgeted for it. This was like the almost obvious thing in the world.
Just, you know, when it got to the point of when the letter came out from the mayor and everything else, there wasn't a lot of public support for council saying, this is our final offer, right?
Absolutely. Really, I think that's why they capitulated so fast.
Yeah.
Right?
Ken in the chat says, can we be honest about downloaded taxes and responsibilities from the province to municipalities? And I remember, I know that Ken was tuned in on our Thursday episode because I remember a comment that he made then. So you can, we have, so he's chief of staff, Lisa Holmes was in with St. Albert Mayor Kathy Heron and Tyler Gandon, president of Alberta Municipalities, talking about the city of Edmonton, $60 million that they're owed. And it is a big deal, I think, more particularly for the big cities.
So I will say, is it a big deal? So there's the politics of it, which is like, hey, let's blame the province. So if you look at the four-year increase, if we assume 7.2 next year, it will mean $550 million in additional property tax revenue per year, $550 million. The $60 million is because they changed a grant that was worth $14 million per year in 2019. So they just add it. So it's being made out to be this, the reason you have this big increase is the provincial government.
It's worth about a percentage point.
It's a good talking point.
No, it's not worth a percentage point. That's not how the budget works. It's worth $14 million on $550 million. So we've got $550 million a year.
Compounded.
So if they were to have paid it every year, it works out to $14 million per year.
Yeah.
But a one-time $60 million doesn't really shift the needle.
Okay.
I'd also like to say that, like, if you look at Bill OP-12, where the city council last year when they were doing the budgeting said, we need to find, what, $300 million in savings. And they sent poor city manager Andre Corbett off on this mission, and it was supposed to be this thing. And how much cutting have they actually done? How much cost savings? So again, when you don't have money and you can't pay your bills and you can't do the things, I'm being extreme right now, you have to take a look at your family budget and say, where do we cut? And we have been unable to see results from Bill OP-12. Has it kind of just disappeared? Because it went then in camera, it went behind the scenes, it was no longer open and transparent for everyone to follow along. And have they found the $60 to $240 to $300 million in savings? Have we seen anything substantial? We saw a framework of how they were going to do it, but we never saw any results from it. So we need to look internally as well too.
You guys want to stick around for the flamethrower?
Are you gonna accuse me of gaslighting again?
No, I didn't accuse you of gaslighting. I'm gonna ramp things up here on behalf of Real Talkers.
Okay.
So you guys have a front row seat. As you know, this is how we wrap up every week right here on Real Talk. These are real emails received to talk@ryanjesperson.com. The absolute best. It is the flamethrower presented by our friends at the DQs of Northwest Edmonton in Sherwood Park. This one from Gabriel, who writes in and says, Jespo, I know that there's no, and by the way, earmuffs, kids, of course we know that already, but Gabriel says, I know that there's no fucking litmus test for being a mayor. I think he's talking about Jackie Clayton here from Grand Prairie that joined us earlier in the show. He says, but if you're going to talk about things from a place of authority, like the mayor's chair, perhaps your opinion on city building best practices should be informed by facts. So for those in the back, says Gabe, the concept of a 15-minute city is nothing new. It's a concept of city building done in many places, not in North America, that prioritizes people's ability to live in close proximity to living essentials without having to own a car. You know, like one of the main drivers of unaffordability in Canada, a 15-minute city means simply that your grocery store, your pharmacy, your school, parks, sports facilities are a 15-minute walk or bike, and maybe a bus ride from where you live. That's it. He says, snack responsibly on World Economic Forum gummies all you want, but there's no conspiracy here. And honestly, the irony of people fear-mongering about being tracked who drive vehicles where hundreds of pieces of data are collected every time they drive, which is like GPS tracking, is really hard to handle. Ford Motor Company is not a government agency, so I guess the fact that they sell your driving data is totally fine. Is that true? And he says, and respectfully, of course, Grand Prairie is not a 15-minute city. Maybe you can drive across it all at noon in 15 minutes, but it's a typical city in Canada, and that mandates you need to own a vehicle to live at all, let alone have quality of life. So for all those of you in Grand Prairie whose blood pressure went up when Jespo joked about you being Alberta's first 15-minute city, one of our best shorts of all time on YouTube. Wouldn't you say, Johnny? I love that one. Gabe says, rest assured that the direct lights from Davos, Switzerland to your town have not started. But if you need to escape the in-your-mind inevitable lockdown, then buy a bike. Still works in minus 30 and you can avoid all the traffic. That from Gabe. What about this from James, who says, Jespo, I love the podcast. I appreciate you approach discussing real issues in a balanced way, bringing on people with different points of view and political associations. Listening to your recent conversation with Federal Jobs Minister Randy Boisson, I've got some real serious thoughts on what he said about the TMX sale, the pipeline. First of all, I'm glad that the feds, Justin Trudeau, took it on. It wouldn't have been built otherwise. It'll help us get better prices for our oil. That said, the execution of the project has been a complete disaster, and taxpayers are going to take a huge hit. The final cost will probably be around $40 billion, 10 times the initial estimate. I thought the initial was 9, but I digress. He says there's no way any company is going to pay anywhere close to that to take it off their hands. If they sell it at a huge discount, taxpayers will eat the difference. I can't help but think a significant part of cost overruns may be due to government oversight or lack thereof. Plus, there's something disingenuous about selling or giving ownership of the pipeline to Indigenous people when at the same time the government is actively looking to transition us away from oil. That from James. What about this one from They're Done? They sign off, They're Done. Bill 18, Bill 20. Absolutely an abuse of Danielle Smith's power, running Alberta like a dictator, the female version of Putin. She doesn't want the feds in Alberta's business, but she wants her nose in the municipal governance business, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, if she doesn't like what's going on, she can fire a counselor, but we the public voted. There go our rights right out the door. Why can't we fire her? That from They're Done. And this from Angela, who says to all the locally and democratically elected mayors and councils in Alberta, thank you for your service. You can step down now, though, because there's a new mayor in town, and she knows the needs of each of your unique municipalities better than you do. And thanks to all the Albertans that participated in local elections and helped shape local decisions and bylaws. Your votes and your public input mean next to nothing now and in the future, especially if they don't align with the provincial agenda. Premier, why not just go ahead and finish off local democracy quickly and mercifully instead of letting it die a slow and excruciating death? Angela says, thanks for talking about real and critical issues on Real Talk. The flamethrower is presented by the DQs in Palisades, Nemeo, Newcastle, Westmount, and Baseline Road. We'll see you next week right here on Real Talk.
Real Talk is hosted by Ryan Jesperson. Executive producer, Josh Dunford. Technical producer, John Hicks. General manager, Katie Cook-Chivers. Account coordinator, Lawrence Derlego. Human resources, Lena Shepherd. Website design, Mike Johnston. Voiceover by me, Carrie Skelton. Real Talk's editorial board is Supriya Duvetti, Ahmed Ali, Brandy Morin, Ann Castleman, Corey Hogan, Harmon Candola, Catherine O'Neill, and Chris Henderson. Member Emerita, Julie Rohr. Real Talk is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional and ancestral territory of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, and Nakota Sioux, home to the Métis settlements and the Métis Nation of Alberta. Real Talk is a Relay project. For more, check out ryanjesperson.com.